At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy, thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online, After Midnight.
When you've grown up in a family that trades ghost stories the way other families pass down recipes, you learn early that the world isn't as empty as it looks. That was the case for the young woman whose story I'm about to tell you. Her mother used to call her the little witch baby, not as an insult, but as a half-joking acknowledgement that she seemed to sense things before anyone else. Now, 21, she has spent most of her life moving from place to place, but the longest stretch has been in a narrow 3-bedroom townhouse where the real haunting began to gather weight. She still lives there with her mother and her older sister. School and dance classes keep her tethered close to home, and that means the townhouse, with its thin walls and creaking floors, has become more than just an address. It's become a kind of stage on which unseen presences seem to enter and exit at will. The upstairs hallway forms a T-shape. At the short end, above the staircase, sits her mother's room. At the far end, side by side, like twin sentries, are the bedrooms she shares with her sister. The top of the staircase has always felt charged, as if the air itself remembers the countless footsteps that have gone up and down. Her sister's room faces it directly, the door habitually left open at night. A window into that restless intersection. As a child, the narrator often dreamed of that hallway light. In the dream, her mother's voice would call out, asking her to switch it off, and a dread unlike anything in waking life would crawl up her spine as she stepped across the threshold. Each time she flipped the switch, the light would snuff out by itself and the dark would feel thick and alive, radiating something distinctly malicious. She would wake up breathless, only to find the dread lingering like a residue. Many nights she would sit upright in bed, flicking on her bedside lamp just to push it back. Sometimes, just after the lamp came on, she heard the floorboards pop as though someone were shifting weight on the stairs. Other times, there was the unmistakable sound of soft shuffling in the hallway, as though the dream had spilled over into the real house. For years, the family endured a catalog of disturbances. Stereos that snapped on by themselves and blasted at full volume. Brand new guitar amps that surged to maximum output mid-song. Televisions that clicked off and on as if an invisible hand worked the remote. There were orbs, bright as moth wings, that zipped through rooms in plain view. And once a black wing-shaped blur swooped over her head and seemed to land behind her. She turned certain she'd find something there and saw nothing but carpet. Her mother has long believed that the townhouse serves as a kind of crossroads that some entities simply drift through, passing from one place to another. while a few have decided to stay. The family refers to them as the passers-through and the stationary ones. The passers-through are unpredictable. Some leave behind nothing more than a fleeting scent or a gentle brush of air, almost comforting. Others arrive like a cold gust that slams doors and rattles nerves. One winter evening, when the narrator was about 10, she and her sister, then in high school, were curled on opposite couches in the living room watching television. Out of nowhere, the younger girl caught the perfume, sweet fragrance of lilacs. It was sharp, clean, and threaded, with a soft breeze that shouldn't have been there. Every window was sealed against the frost, and the furnace carried no such scent. She asked her sister if she smelled it. The older girl shook her head. Moments later, the lilac scent drifted across the room, and the older sister stiffened, now smelling it herself. They exchanged a startled laugh. A friendly ghost, they joked, until a second wave of scent rolled in, rotten and pungent, turning their amusement into queasy silence. The smell passed as suddenly as it came, and within minutes a streak of light shot out of the room and vanished into the hall. Not every encounter was so fleeting or harmless. One evening in high school, the narrator sat at the family computer when a surge of panic and confusion swept over her. She turned to her right and saw, sitting cross-legged on the floor beside her chair, a teenage boy she had never seen before. He was looking up at her, as if just as startled to be seen. The air around him hummed with sadness. She swallowed her fear, whispered that he needed to leave, and bolted upstairs to her mother's room. He never appeared again. There were others, the fleeting shape of large dogs seen padding silently across the basement floor, the faint whisper of voices close enough to tickle an ear, the impression of figures darting up the staircase just as someone turned the corner. Her mother in particular had frequent encounters with what she called the basement dogs, until one day, she and an aunt performed a quiet cleansing ritual down there. The dogs were never seen again. The stationary presences, the ones who seemed to have claimed a permanent foothold in the townhouse, were a different story. One, a tall young native man with long black hair, radiated a curious calm. He appeared mostly near her bed as she was settling in for the night. She often felt his presence as a distinct coolness on her cheek or the backs of her hands, like the sensation of cold sinking through the skin, instead of merely brushing it. She caught glimpses of him only in the liminal hours, just before dawn, just after dark. She never minded him, in a house that had taught her to brace for the unexpected. His presence was almost welcome. But there was also the old woman. Whether she was one entity or two, the narrator has never been sure. Sometimes the old woman felt identical to a third, darker presence. Her voice was a low, rasping whisper that came without warning at close range, loud enough to make the listener flinch as if someone's lips were inches from their ear. More than once, she had been startled in the basement while dancing, catching the figure of an elderly woman at the edge of her vision. Once, while strumming her guitar as a teenager, she heard the unmistakable whisper at her shoulder. "That's nice." She dropped the pick and fled upstairs. The last of the stationary presences, perhaps merely another face of the old woman, was the most troubling, angry, restless, malicious. The hallway outside the sisters' bedrooms never felt quiet at night, always charged with low-level motion, like something pacing just out of view. Because her cat insisted on having the bedroom door open, she often found herself lying in bed, staring straight out into that strip of shadowed hall, alert to every flicker of movement. The first time she realized the dark presence could cross the threshold of her room, it came with her cat's refusal to sleep beside her. That cat had always been her furry barometer of the unseen. On peaceful nights, the old tabby would curl on the quilt, purring until dawn. But there were weeks when the animal wouldn't even step over the threshold. If she tried to scoop the cat up and set her on the bed, the animal would leap off, tail bushed, and bolt into the hall. Those were the nights when sleep became a trial, when nightmares clawed at her until she woke slick with sweat, feeling that familiar, malicious, mischievous energy pressing at the corners of the room. One of the worst of those weeks began with her waking to the sound of something shuffling through the darkness beside her bed. At first, she assumed it was the cat. She stayed still, hoping the noise would settle, but the sound persisted, a slow drag of something across carpet. Finally, she pushed herself upright and caught a glimpse of movement, a small, crouching form that slid along the baseboard and vanished straight into the wall. The sight left her shaking, but she convinced herself it had to have been a trick of shadow and exhaustion. She lay back down and tried to ignore the hammering of her heart. The shuffling came again, louder this time, as if circling the bed. She couldn't bring herself to reach for the lamp. Instead, she decided to retreat to her mother's room, where the air always felt lighter. As she swung her legs over the side of the bed, she heard a deep, slow breath behind her and collided with something solid, something that hadn't been there before. Her shin struck hard against it. For a dazed second, she thought it was the small wooden stool she sometimes kept near the bed for stacking books, but that stool, she remembered, was on the opposite side of the room. Whatever she'd bumped into had the density of a body. That was the breaking point. She fled to her mother's room in tears and begged to sleep anywhere else. Her mother murmured that she could take the couch or stay where she felt safe. After a while, she gathered herself, determined to face it. She returned to her bedroom, flipped on the lamp, and immediately felt that rush of oppressive energy spill toward her again like cold air rolling in from a cave. The stool was in its usual place, nowhere near the bed. The memory of that solid impact against her leg stayed with her all night. Months passed. Her life grew busier, new classes, a serious boyfriend, and the activity in the townhouse ebbed for a while. When she began spending most nights at her boyfriend's place, her room at home grew unused, the bed neatly made but rarely slept in. Then came the night she returned home after nearly a week away. She missed her family and she missed the old cat, but as soon as she stepped into her bedroom, she felt it. A different atmosphere, heavy and watchful. The cat skittered away the moment she tried to coax her onto the bed, hissing at nothing she could see. She chalked it up to feline pique at her absence and turned in for the night. That's when the dream came. In the dream, she sat on the edge of her bed playing her bass guitar. It was night, the room lit only by the glow of her bedside lamp, but the perspective wasn't her own. She was seeing herself from just behind her right shoulder, as though someone stood in the doorway watching her play. A horrible dread swelled in her chest as the unseen observer in the dream reached toward the lamp and the amp, trying to plunge the room into darkness and crank the volume to a scream. The dread followed her up out of the dream and into waking. She opened her eyes to the same dim room and felt certain something was standing near the foot of the bed. Exhausted, she told herself it was nothing, rolled over, tried to sleep again. That's when she felt the weight. It started lightly. The unmistakable sensation of footsteps pressing into the blanket at her feet. Relieved, she assumed it was the cat finally coming around and even started to sit up to reach for her. But the quilt was empty. The pressure moved again, sinking the blankets down in two deliberate steps, inching closer toward her thighs. For a long moment, she simply watched the indentations travel across the bed toward her. Then she snapped, threw the covers back and fled the room for the safety of her mother's bed. For a week after that, she refused to sleep in her own room. Eventually, her boyfriend and her mother convinced her to reclaim the space. She fell back on an old superstition that a clean and orderly room left less room for chaos to take hold. She spent an afternoon scrubbing, rearranging, decluttering, the ritual she always turned to whenever the activity grew too intense. Whether by coincidence or cause, the oppressive atmosphere lightened. The cat returned to her nighttime perch. For a while, it felt as though she had won back her sanctuary. But peace never lasted long in the townhouse. By the time her relationship ended and she moved home full-time again, the disturbances flared up once more, as though something in the house had been waiting for her return. At first, it was subtle, the sense of being watched as she drifted to sleep, faint knocks at her bedroom door that stopped the moment she opened it. Then it became louder, more violent. Nightmares plagued her. Her stereo and dresser rattled as if struck by unseen fists. Heavy footsteps circled in the upstairs hallway. Once, as she stepped out of the bathroom, the door slammed shut hard enough to rattle the frame. Another afternoon, a storage bag fell from the far back of her closet shelf and struck her square in the face, impossible to explain by gravity alone. The knocking soon turned into its own strange ritual, persistent, polite, almost gentle, yet always coming when she was alone. Her mother experienced it once herself, sitting in the bathroom as three deliberate raps sounded on the door. Each time they would open it to find no one there. The nights were worse. When she did manage to sleep, she often woke from vivid dreams pinned to the mattress by an invisible weight. One morning, she came out of a half-paralyzed state to find the figure of a man lying across her chest. For a few heartbeats, she thought it was a remnant of the dream, until the paralysis slipped away and she was fully awake, yet still felt the press of his form before it abruptly lifted and seemed to fly backward out of the room. She wanted to dismiss it as a trick of waking dreams, but the memory of that heavy presence stayed as clear as the slam of a door. Grief has its own gravity, and in that townhouse it seemed to bend the air. After the breakup, she started spending every night at home again. You could feel the house register her return the way a lake registers a stone. The hall grew busy after midnight, soft footfalls with no weight, the whisper of fabric where there was no one to wear it. She told herself she could out-stubborn a haunting. She couldn't. The nights got louder. The knocks turned into bangs. The bathroom door learned to time its slams for when her hand touched the knob. What unnerved her most was the etiquette of it. The knocking on the bedroom door always came in threes, polite, patient, persistent, like a neighbor asking to borrow sugar. She'd open it to the absence in the hallway and stand there a long time listening to the townhouse breathe. Her mother heard the same pattern one afternoon in the bathroom. Three gentle raps, the pause of someone waiting to be invited, then nothing. The quiet afterward was louder than any pound. Meanwhile, her sleep grew crowded. Some nights she woke into that half-world where the body forgets it can move. On one of those mornings, she surfaced to the sight of a man stretched across her chest. No face she could hold on to, just the definite shape and weight. Panic crawled up her throat. She squeezed her eyes shut as if that could erase him. When she opened them again, she could move, and she watched the shape peel away from her like smoke, reversed, retreating backward through the doorway and out. She tried to talk herself down the way you talk down a skittish animal. You dreamed it. It's leftover fear. It's the mind doing what minds do. But the body knows its own pressures. The ribs remember. Days took on the disorienting rhythm of someone living two lives. The daylight version with classes and coffee and laundry. The nighttime version with signals only she seemed to catch. She'd be working at her computer by the closet, and a bag shoved deep on a top shelf would launch itself forward, arc neatly through the air, and slap her across the face. Later, she'd replay the geometry of it in her mind, trying to map a path where gravity could be the culprit. There wasn't one. She became pragmatic. She cleaned. She rearranged. She enforced the order that had always been her truce with the unseen. It helped a little. Her old cat reoccupied the foot of the bed like a veteran retaking a hill, tail tucked around her paws, half asleep and on duty. But grief kept leaking back in, the kind that has nothing to do with ghosts. Her ex had started seeing someone else, and the information burned with an ordinary human heat. She went to bed sore with it, and the house seemed to notice. The same night she woke from a dream of him, and lay crying into the pillow, a tall, dark shape slipped through her doorway and out. No drama, just a fact, like the shadow of a person leaving a room who isn't there to begin with. She took the cross her mother had given her from above the bed and looped the chain around her neck. She wasn't particularly religious, but the weight of the metal steadied her pulse in a way nothing else did. With the cross between her fingers, her dreams thinned to gauze. She slept. Then came the visiting dead. She half woke from a dream speaking to someone in the dream, saying that her sister's friend, the one who had taken her own life months earlier, would be coming by. She described how the girl would look, fuzzy at first, shorter, the face not visible right away. The words left her mouth in the dream, and then she was awake, and the room was quiet, and the sentence still hung there inside her, like a stone placed on a shelf. She didn't tell her sister. She didn't want to plant an idea that might bloom into something they couldn't prune back. What she did tell them finally was the part she couldn't hold alone. I feel like I'm being targeted. Her mother didn't argue. Her sister didn't either. They'd seen the escalation. They'd watched doors answer questions no one had asked. They'd learned to read the cat. The house took on that tight, expectant quality again. She tried a weekend escape back to the ex's place because even complicated comfort is still comfort. That night, she dreamed of a bathroom with a tub and something lying in it. She called for her mother, who rushed in and shoved her toward the hall just as a girl vaulted from the tub and sprinted straight at her, through her, and into the wall. She woke with her body locked, breath shallow. She reached for her ex beside her, grateful for the architectural certainty of muscle and bone. Then she felt movement at the bottom of the bed. Black shape, low and quick, circling where her feet were. For a heartbeat, she mistook it for the cat before remembering the cat was miles away. She kicked her legs, not to hit, but to insist on being in a body again. Her ex woke, groggy, wrapped an arm around her without asking a single question. She didn't have an answer anyway. When she returned home, the activity didn't recede. It sharpened. The sweet presence, the tall native man who cooled her cheek like mountain air, would still visit in the thin hours, a reminder that not all attention is predatory. But the other thing, the hallway thing, the top of the stairs thing, the voice in the ear thing, had reclaimed territory. Doors didn't just close, they chose their moments. The washroom door nudged open an inch as she reached for it, slowly enough for her to see the motion and think of drafts and pressure changes, then slammed hard enough to ring the hinge pins. She stood with her palm against the wood and felt no wind at all. Sleep became a border she crossed carefully. She'd fall under more quickly with the cross wound in her hand, like a talisman made of condensed attention. On the nights when she forgot it, the dreams reverted, her bass thrumming in a room watched from the doorway, someone's fingers hovering over the lamp switch, eager to plunge her back into the kind of dark that has weight. Sometimes she woke to the foot of the bed, footsteps pressing into the covers. Two steps, pause, as if whatever couldn't see her was mapping its way by indentations. She kept working. She kept dancing. She dated a little out of defiance and sometimes out of hope. But she also grew quieter, conserving energy in the way people do when their nights belong to something else. The house wasn't evil all the time, only occupied. And yet she found herself cataloging new rules. Never answer a knock after midnight unless you can see the knocker. Never step into the hallway without a light. Never discount the way the cat refuses a room. Always have a place to retreat to with a door that opens inward so you can pull it shut. One evening, she sat at the edge of her bed and stared out into the open doorway, waiting to see if the hallway would show its hand. The light from the bathroom threw a weak trapezoid onto the carpet. The top of the stairs was a darker square beyond. For once, nothing moved. No whisper. No knock. Just the house holding its breath back at her. She lifted the cross on its chain and let it rest against her lips like a cool coin. "Not tonight," she said to the air, because language is also a way to set a line. She switched off the lamp. The dream, when it came, wasn't spectacular. It never is in stories like this. She was sorting clothes, then walking down the hall, then turning because someone had spoken her name almost kindly. The voice came from the top of the stairs. She woke at that same moment with the certainty of a presence very close to her left ear. And the softest exhale, like the beginning of a word with no sound added yet. Only intention. Her body didn't lock this time. She didn't run to her mother's bed. She rolled onto her back, pressed the cross flat between her palms, and counted breaths until her pulse released her. Morning peeled the house back to ordinary. The cat yawned. A neighbor's car coughed to life. The bathroom door stayed put. She knows better than to claim an ending. There are just stretches, calm ones, and not. The townhouse is still a T of hallway with a charged corner above the stairs. She still keeps the door open for the cat, which means the dark has a square of invitation to aim for. Some nights that square fills with nothing. Some nights it skims with movement. When it's bad, she cleans and rearranges and anchors the bed to reality with a sleeping animal and a cool metal cross. When it's good, she dares to sleep without armor. If you're listening to this with your own bedroom door cracked open, you might feel that familiar tickle of awareness now. The tiny elevator drop in the gut that says the room is paying attention back. Don't panic. Draw the line you can draw. Keep what steadies you within reach. And if you hear the polite three knocks, the kind that sound like a neighbor with perfect manners, you don't owe the dark your answer. She still doesn't. And most nights, the dark seems to understand until it doesn't. That's when the house leans in, the floorboards pop, and somewhere just past the threshold of the open door, something waits with all the patience in the world to see whether she'll speak first.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT. Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.